And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 1st, 2021. 212021. Is that a palindrome? No, not a palindrome. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and wow, do we have some fun ahead of us. I can't wait to hear you, Ted, working your magic, connecting TikTok sea shanties to climate change. Tune in because it works. He does make it happen.
What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? Lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Lie in the morning, put him in a longboat till he's sober. Put him in a longboat till he's sober. Put him in a longboat till he's sober.
So, Mariah, I do not have a TikTok account. I apologize. I don't have an Instagram account. I do obsess over my Twitter account, but I don't have a TikTok account. TikTok, evidently, for all those kids out there, is a thing where you make a little video of yourself singing or dancing or some cute thing, and you put it up. And the video, I think, only lasts like 90 seconds or 52 seconds or some relatively short amount. So why am I talking about TikTok? Well, recently, some guy in quarantine down in New Zealand was going stir crazy and took it upon himself to sing a sea shanty into his TikTok account and thought, okay, I'll get 5 viewers or some limited number of viewers. And of course, the thing went viral, as they say. And millions of people would sing along with the sea shanty, providing, base points, high points, all kinds of stuff. It turned out to be quite a thing, a viral thing. I looked at a few of them. They're very, very entertaining. And I think, it got to the point where some fairly famous people were...
Andrew Lloyd Webber and Jimmy Fallon.
And so what I thought, dear listener, I thought what we'd do tonight is Mariah and I are going to do a performance of the one. No. We're not going
to
do that.
You don't want me to sing.
But sea shanties are an interesting topic. So sea shanties are quite rhythmic, little catchy tunes, right? They go back a long way because the sea shanties were basically used to coordinate the effort of pulling up the sails. Right? So if you're on a whaling boat and you got to pull that heavy sail up in heavy wind and everything's frozen, y'all got to get together at exactly the right time to pull on the rope. And that's what the sea shanties allowed you to do. Quite rhythmic.
Rhythm, yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a whole train of things that we're going to connect here. Sea shanties, whaling boats.
What does that have to do with climate?
Where are you going, Ted? Well, let me tell you. First, we're going to go to New Bedford, my hometown. New Bedford, Massachusetts, the town that lit the world, which was a whaling capital through much of the first half of the 1800s. Okay. And for some reason, when I was living in New Bedford 100 years later, I was still singing some of these sea shanties you hear about, like what do you do with a drunken sailor, which I think is fairly well known. So I'm sort of quizzing myself as to how many other people are aware of sea shanties and would have sung. Was I being in the sea shanty capital of the East Coast? Would I have known them? But I do know that my mother was a child of a grandchild of an alcoholic. She was very much down on alcohol, on drinking alcohol. And one of the stories that she would tell you, the reason not to drink is that that people in New Bedford would go into the bars, they would get drunk, and then they'd get, in quote unquote, shanghaied, where they'd get clunked on the head after they were drunk, spirited through a tunnel, put on a boat, and when they woke up, sobered up, they were out to sea on a 2-year journey.
Oh my gosh.
That's how they staffed the whaling boats.
Wow.
And so that was a good reason not to get drunk in New Bedford and get clunked on the head in Shanghai. Who knows? But I say that because that leads to the next point. Whaling was a big industry. And of course, most people know that whale blubber was used, it provided a pretty clear light. So if you wanted to have a nice lamp in your home in 1835, you use whale oil, right? And it was expensive, and New Bedford gave it to you by going out and killing whales out on the high seas. So there you go. The industry's marching along. And then in the 1840s, this guy discovers kerosene in Pennsylvania, right? And all of a sudden, the kerosene can begin to replace the whale oil. And what took shape from that that historical kind of experience is a myth that is promulgated still by sort of conservative economists who say, oh, yes, the lowest price technology will always win the day. Markets rule. Markets are infallible. Look in the 1840s, cheaper kerosene supplanted whale oil, and that's why the whaling industry disappeared. And so by implication, renewable energy, cheap solar panels and wind turbines will supplant fossil fuels. So you don't need to actually do anything to get rid of the fossil fuel industry. Look, you can just wait. The market will do its magic. There's an article I read that talked about how that myth is basically not true, that the whaling industry continued from the 1830s and 40s on, and in fact is still with us. There are still people whaling coming out of like Iceland and Japan, and there is an international whaling organization that's trying to regulate the commercial whaling and still hasn't. I mean, there are people in Japan that like to eat whale meat, right? And so they're out there harpooning these guys with cannons, and so there's a myth that you could believe, very simplified story that says the cheaper technology, the kerosene, pushed the whaling industry out. The historical story is more accurate that, in fact, the whaling industry changed, modified, and according to this article, many whaling ships actually entered the slave trade for reasons that are, you know, kind of, they were able to masquerade as whalers even as they were carrying slaves back and forth across the Atlantic. And there you go. There are still people whaling today. What's the take-home lesson of such a story? Right? Well, the take-home lesson is that we should not believe the myth that dirt cheap solar energy will make the fossil fuel companies go away. They will still be there doing their evil as trying to make money. And when you begin to look at it, now you can jump and say to stuff we have talked about, but basically what connected all the dots this week was an article by Bill McKibben in The New Yorker, where he's talking about an organization called Beyond Plastic. Right? So here's the deal. Just as the whalers tried to get into the slave industry, slave trade, shall we say, to keep their business alive, the fossil fuel companies that currently see the handwriting on the wall, they know they're not going to be able to make gasoline for cars anymore. Now they want to make plastic. Right? And so all of the fossil fuel feedstock, the methane that we've talked about, which gets fracked out of the ground, all that methane is not going to go to produce automobile gas. It's going to go to make what are called the precursor chemicals for plastic, right? Well, you say, okay, they're not burning, making carbon dioxide, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, it turns out that plastic production is a climate issue. And it's plastic production on several fronts is a climate issue because you still have to do the fracking to get the methane out of the ground. So you're still doing this ugly extraction, even whether you're making plastic or gasoline. And in fact, one of the articles talks about how, you know, right now in 2021, we look back at the whale oilers, you know, boiling blubber on the South Atlantic, right? This grotesque thing, right? How could those people have done that? In 100 years, people are going to look at us and say, how could they have gouged this stuff out of the earth, destroyed, you know, basically the rape of the earth, pulling out coal and fossil fuels, right? Anyway, to make plastics, you still have to have methane. You're still going to have leakage from the methane wells. When you produce plastic, the plans that these guys have in place, the plan B for Exxon, which is to make plastic chemicals, that'll be the equivalent of 295 new coal plants, right?
Wow.
Nobody needs 295 new coal plants. That all by itself is disqualifying. But then the argument is once you've made the plastic, then you have to, the disposal, you're just burning the plastic mostly. You're burning it and that emits carbon dioxide. Or there's even the idea that as that plastic sits around in either the ocean or in a landfill, as it breaks down, it gives off greenhouse gases.
Yeah, right? Animals, you know, all of the sea life is eating it. It doesn't disappear. So they're eating it and it's filling their stomachs and killing them. There's a lot of ocean death from it too.
This article points out as you get into what's called the microplastic. So,
yeah.
You know,
it doesn't ever go away.
The plastic lasts forever, but the it gets abraded and scraped and broken up into smaller and smaller pieces, and the animals ingest it. And in fact, what one of the articles said that the algae in the ocean are ingesting some of the microplastic, and then they don't consume as much carbon dioxide as they used to.
Right? Wow.
So, point being that plastic production is a climate issue. It's where the fossil fuel major companies want to go. And the take-home lesson from this whole discussion is the idea that the fossil fuel companies are not going to disappear because of solar panels. They're going to find a new way to live. Those fossil fuel companies need to be regulated out of existence. Right? If you don't like the plastic, then those guys need to find that the business model doesn't work. It's not acceptable. And that we need to be on guard. And just because, you know, the amount of gasoline that's being sold is going down, the amount of plastic that's being sold is going up, right? And the article makes the case that there's no way to recycle plastic. Like the vast majority of the plastic doesn't get recycled, and of the plastic that's made, most of it is not even recyclable. Right? It's my understanding it's only the number one PETE that can even be recycled. The rest of it is just junk, right? And so you're not going to recycle your way out of the problem. You just have to stop making plastic. So
yeah, I don't know if it would fully address the problem of plastics, but Rebecca Henderson out of Harvard Business School has written some compelling articles about how the market could be an effective way to stop, you know, to sort of eliminate fossil fuels and used as a tool for climate change if the externalities were incorporated in it. And the problem is that there's so much subsidies being given to fossil fuel companies, and they are not being held to account for the environmental and health degradation that the fossil fuels are producing. And so essentially the market should be working against them, but it's not, because they keep getting give me's to make the market not work against them. I think that, like you said, we need to actively regulate it out of existence, and regulating for the atrocities that it's doing, that the plastics are doing, and fossil fuels as well, to the environment might make the market work, but we can't count on the market if we're not actually holding it to account.
Absolutely. Well, I think that, so just in review, dear listener, we went from the New Zealand guy singing a sea shanty to the whale oil myth, which then informs our thinking about how we have to deal with the fossil fuel companies. I would say now I'm going to sing a short rendition of Blow the Man Down. You ready, Mariah? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to sing any sea shanties, much as my heart wants to. I know everyone's going to miss that, but I recommend, I'll put in links to a few of the sea shanties. If you don't know what we're talking about, listen to them and you'll instantly recognize the song probably, or you'll be attracted to the sort of pace of it. There you go. You can find the links to your favorite sea shanty at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you want the lyrics to a sea shanty, or you want to change a sea shanty, send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Please, I tell you what, record yourself singing a sea shanty and send it to us. We'll put it on the air. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their favorite podcast distribution app. I want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. We'll sing again soon. Hi. As a little bonus, we'll play the full version of Drunken Sailor. It's sung by a guy named Roger McGinn, who has had a long and impressive history as a musician. He was a member of a group called The Byrds in the 1960s, and they were in turn famous for, among none other things, a song called 8 Miles High, which everyone of a certain age will remember. Anyway, this song comes to you under a Creative Commons copyright, and the link to the McGinn site is in the blog. So enjoy.
What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? Why, in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, put him in a longboat till he's sober. Put him in a longboat till he's sober. Put him in a longboat till he's sober. Or lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, pull out the plug and wet him all over. Pull out the plug and wet him all over. Pull out the plug and wet him all over. Lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, put him in the bilge and make him drink it. Put him in the bilge and make him drink it. Put him in the bilge and make him drink it. Or lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Or lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, heave him out of the lake with a running bowline. Heave him out of the lake with a running bowline. Heave him out of the lake with a running bowline. Lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, keel haul him until he's sober. Keel haul him until he's sober. Keel haul him until he's sober. Lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, that's what we do with a drunken sailor. That's what we do with a drunken sailor. That's what we do with a drunken sailor. Lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning, way up she rises, way up she rises, way up she rises. Or lie in the morning.
Very cool.